the session to begin with. The first presenter of the second session of this policy SIG is Mr. Kosuke Ito from IPv6 Promotion Council in Japan.
Good morning. My name is Kosuke from IPv6 Promotion Council of Japan. As regularly we reported, our largest IPv4 address space utilizing trial since back in 2001, I believe. And this time it will be a 10th report at the IPNIC meeting. Sorry about. Okay. For this time, I'd like to report that first of all, we ended the phase one of this trial. Then since that twice APNIC ago, we proposing to extend this program toward that, the end of the 2008. Then we trying to make that the purpose of the phase one and phase two. So I like to report how we have done in phase one at the beginning. Then at the last part, we are reporting how we started off the IP, phase two of this trial. Phase one of, at the end of the phase one, as the end of the 2005, phase one was closed as that we planned. Then four participants has completed the transit IPv6 service deployment. The address space allocated to has been returned to IPv6 PC by the deadline, which is the end of the 2005. There are six participants were involved in the phase one. Then there's one participant successfully deploying IPv6 service, which is Yozan is the participant who is operating a WiMAX carrier service. Then, so we collected address space from them to be, they shifting toward the real business phase. And for the other participants, address space allocated to each of the other, each of them is succeeded to utilized as in phase two. Then, last January, we collecting the reports of the phase one from the each of the participants at the regular hearing session. Then, according to them, we summarized that phase one of the results, which is first part of goodness of the trial. By this trial, large global address space allocation at the one time leads the new service deployment, which is we can observe that the less expensive always-on broadband services for home users, and also multiple fixed IP address service, and also area-wide wireless LAN service, which requires that certain address block at the each access point. And VoIP IP phone service and contents delivery network service. And new findings we could have is that ease of the large-scale network service design by that large global address space allocation at the one time is leads to less operation cost, which is more efficient way of the design of the network. And also, they are start looking at how they can start it off the V6 transition. So this is really good part of the trial itself. Each participant considering when they are feel like it will be better to shift toward the V6 so that they can save the operation cost or save that, trying to make that their network service more scalable so that they started off the how they can do for that future network involvement. Then they found out some issue to be cleared or issue to solve. And some participants found that IPv6 based service is a cost saving, as I said. So this is the one of the very goodness of the trial. However, as I said, that the many of them are still experiencing the many barriers for the transition of IPv6. IPv6 readiness of devices. Many of them know most of the routers and many of the PCs are getting ready for V6. However, not ready yet for many of the necessities surrounding or trying to integrating the network service, which is like a maintaining basic service like a load balancer type of the things or security rating server, that kind of stuff. So many of the components needs to be integrated for that the regular service level of the service in the very business level, they can't collect the whole components together for the V6 ready to use. And also access network to users, which is not ready for the many of the ISPs. Of course, in Japan, many of the large scale ISP started off the V6 service, but not all of them. And especially in the suburbs or rural areas of the small ISPs, they don't started the V6 service. So it's pretty hard to make the native V6 service through the end-to-end. And that's maybe the part is that the difficulty to make the awareness of the users for the V6 itself. And some of the V4 network is not able to accommodate the PC enabling the IPv6. So we have to get rid of this kind of existing V4 networks trying to be more operable of the IPv6 ready PC on top of it. And readiness of software. I think that so far getting better, but still that the DNS query stability, that kind of stuff is still not fully deployed yet. And many of the browsers or that kind of a basic application is not ready yet. And the like web authentication or that kind of application level of the readiness for the V6 is not ready. And of course, that makes some security hole, it could be. So that many of the participants feels like it's pretty too soon to start it off the service by the V6. And this is the really serious part. They are little bit hesitate to start it up the large scale service by the V6 is that security part. And also, some of them tried to start it off the V6, but they have to know, I mean, they found to know that additional care is necessary for V6 DOS or DOS attack or spam filtering, that kind of stuff. Some of them experienced that many of the DOS attack increased on the unused IPv6 address space, so they have to make certain treatment of that kind of a space for that V6 when they are start to use. So that's all about we found out by closing phase one. Then these barriers or issues we should try to clear up for the phase two. Then many of them are expressed that they would like to continue this program by because of that they are would like to clearing up that these kind of issues. Then we start the phase two at the beginning of this year. And so far, IPv6 PC Promotion Council and continuing participants have worked to renew the contract to they can continuously participate on this program. And as of January 1st, we officially started off the trial. And this phase two is to be end by the end of the 2008. Then, and in the contract, participants need to agree the three basic conditions as I listed. First of all, this trial is closed at the end of the 2008, and no extension. This is the promise we made at the APNIC meeting in Fiji, maybe, and when that this extension was approved by the APNIC committee. And participants need to set the IPv6 service deployment goal within this trial and need to submit the deployment schedule. So we sort of the mandate that the participants started off the any sort of the V6 service officially, which that the end users or users of the service can be chosen from their official business menus. And as that we have done so far, report regularly twice a year between IPv6 PC and participants of this program. And participants of the phase two is quite not changed from the phase one. Nationwide ADSL VoIP service provider, nationwide always-on FTTH service provider, L3 connectivity IP phone service provider, and contents delivery networks ASP, and public wireless LAN access service provider. These five are continuing participants to the phase two. And maybe you can guess what they would like to start off the IPv6 is, as listed here, native dual connectivity service and L3 service, which stable, which is stable L3 connectivity by IPv6, regardless of the base IP infrastructure, which is they are on top of the. This service provider is like a VNO, virtual network operator. So they struggle with what's the basic infrastructure can accommodate the V6 or not. So they are trying to utilize the tunnel type of the or VPN type of the technology, which they can make that independent from the basic infrastructure and their service IP network. and the city-wide IPv6 public wireless service, which is maybe many of you are experienced in Kyoto, Miyakonet service, which is Kyoto City's area-wide wireless service, which they are going to make that IPv6 ready. And IPv6 content delivery network platform service by that CDN ASPs. Then we just started off the phase two. And many of them are quite, many of them submit the quite reasonable time schedules, which is cannot disclose that here, but they are trying to make this kind of a service by the end of the 2007 or mid of the 2008. So this should be more practical time schedule, I believe. Then we are from the IPv6 PC point of view, we are trying to observing how they can act in this program and trying to catching up regularly from them about how it's going on that individual participants' activities. Then some basic factor we should share here. We like to bring those kind of issues or findings at the regularly in the IPNIC policy. That's all. Thank you. Is any questions or comments or?
Any comments or questions? Is me, are you making comments or questions? No? Okay, that's fine. Thank you, Ito-san. I believe you will be coming back next APNIC meeting to report this update.
Yes. Yeah, we would like to. We're happy to report this trial status every APNIC meeting.
Thank you, Ito-san.
All right. Thank you very much.
So next speaker is Miyako Tani from JPNIC. She will be talking about survey results in JP on the IPv6 policy change.
Sorry, it took some time to get ready. Hello, everybody. My name is Izumi Okutani, and I work for JPNIC, which is the National Internet Registry in Japan. In this presentation, I would like to introduce the, serv- the results of the surveys we made over the change of IPv6 assignment size, which was proposed at the last meeting by RJEF. So just to explain the background a little bit, in the last meeting in APNIC 20, I remember we note that Jeff Houston made a proposal to, not exactly to change, but add a new assignment size of /56 in addition to the current /48. And for this particular idea, there was a strong concern expressed by one of the members in Japan, and we wanted to find out if it was just this particular member which was really concerned about this change, or you know, it was just it reflects the concerns of the community in general. So we decided to conduct a survey. And the objective is from two points. Firstly, to see how this policy change would impact LIRs from the perspective of services they're providing, their network, and the impact to their customers, and also if it would, you know, lead to any additional expenses. And the second point is that we understand that there has been like slight three variations of the similar proposal. One is what's been proposed in APNIC 20, and another one is being proposed in RIPE, which is a little bit different version from the APNIC 1, and also in ARIN. So we wanted to know if out of these three proposals, a particular proposal would make it more agreeable to the LIRs or in Japan or not, or they just don't like the idea in general. So what we did was that we have 64 LIRs who are currently receiving IPv6 assignment in Japan. So we sent an email questionnaire to these people. We got responses from 36 LIRs, so it's about a little over 50% of responses. And the services they're providing is that a little over 70%, the majority of the LIRs are currently still providing the testing service, and the rest, a little less than 30% of the LIRs have started the commercial service. And the method is that we basically sent an email questionnaire on these four areas that I've just explained earlier, which is services, network, customer, and cost. And we asked questions how it would this policy change would have an impact on these four areas for each of the three cases. Case one is the case which was introduced, proposed in APNIC 20. So this is simply adding /56 as an additional assignment size to /48. And this would be this is intended to be used for Soho or home users. The second case is what was proposed in RIPE 50 and 51, I believe. And the difference between the APNIC one and this one is that an LIR can decide whether to assign a /56 or 48 or 56, depending on their needs. So it's more flexible than the one that was proposed in APNIC 20. And case three is that I don't think it's formally been proposed in ARIN, but there was a talk about removing the fixed boundaries. So instead of, you know, fixing boundaries to either 56 or 48, let's just, you know, do it like IPv4. So it can be anywhere within the boundary. For example, it can be like a /68, /39, or whatever size that LIR think is appropriate to size to fit the size of the network. So these, we try to see the impact on each of the three cases. And the result is first, the impact on the service. We found that regardless of which case it was, the majority of the people felt that there's no impact on their service they're providing. So over 80% of the people replied no impact. And the reasons that they felt there was no impact was because most of them haven't started the commercial service. And we were expecting maybe, you know, the they might give the reason it would have more flexibility in size for cases in 2 and 3. But as a, when we actually see the results, not that many people see this as the reason. And for those people who have actually replied that there will be impact on the service, they, for most of them, it's they have to change the target of their service if this policy would be implemented. For example, when I think at the moment they don't really differentiate between like SOHO and corporate services, but they might have to, you know, start splitting the target or things like that. The impact on the network. Again, the majority of the people reply there's no impact on the network. And as the flexibility of the policy increases, the impact slightly decreases. And it seems that the more flexibility that there's given to the policy, the impact will shift from the customer network to the infrastructure. So they have to make more changes to the infrastructure rather than the customer as the compared to case three compared to case one. And the third, impact on existing customers. Again, there's hardly no impact on the existing customers. And as you can see, for case three, there are hardly no impact because it gives a lot of flexibility. But this is the area that was the people expressed that there will be a substantial impact. This is the cost. Over 50% of the people reply that they would have to, you know, have additional cost to deal with this policy change. And although if you look at each of the three cases, case three would have the least impact out of the three, the impact is still almost 50%. Oh, right, okay. And so we looked further into it. And so what would specifically be the actual cost that will be incurred as a result of this policy change? And the majority of the people reply that it's about less than 1 million to 1 million yen, which is, the majority of the people reply that it would be less than 500,000 yen or 0.3 man-month. But there were also a few LIRs about, it's maybe less than 10% of the LIRs reply that they have to pay more than 1 million Japanese yen to deal with this policy change, which is a very large amount. And we also received some comments regarding this policy change, which instead of just, you know, ticking the questions. And first is that there were generally very negative feelings towards removing fixed boundaries. So for case three, quite a lot of LIR, not in numbers, but people expressed strong concerns over this. Not necessarily because of the direct costs that are incurred from this, but it would increase their fixed costs for their host master work or network maintenance because it would increase the complexity of their network. And some people also felt that there seems to be quite a few policy changes before, you know, the IPv6 is actually taking place. So it might give some impressions to users or people in the company that, you know, IPv6 is still an unstable technology and it might have some impact on the deployment. Another thing is that I think some people genuinely didn't understand why we still need to change this policy instead of the HD ratio change, which reached consensus in the last meeting. And I understand this is just a projection and not a prediction, But you know, people felt that if it would extend the life of IPv6 up to 600 years, why do we have to go through further changes of changing the assignment size as well? That was a question. And I also briefly introduced the situation in the Aryan community that there seems to have quite a substantial support for removing the fixed boundaries. And questions were asked over why there's a difference in the opinion in JP and Aryan, and whether the rest of the community outside Japan is aware of this kind of impact and situation in Japan and discussing these kind of changes. And if not, they wanted us to share this situation with the rest of the community. And then the third point is pretty much, maybe it's a lot to do with the nature of our nation, that we really to look into the details. But people felt that the details of the actual implementation was not so clear how it would affect the additional allocation, or how they should judge which size to assign. So some people felt that they can't judge if they support this proposal or not, because the details are not clear. So the overall observation on the result of the proposal is that generally, there are no major notable impact on most of the areas, i.e. services, network, and to the customers. But there are a substantial impact on the cost to deal with this change. And not just in terms of the numbers, but two of the LIRs in Japan actually have to go through over $85,000 to deal with this change. So it really is not small. And also, in terms of the survey results, if we just look at the numbers, it seems that case three demonstrates the least impact. But in the comment section, people did express quite a strong concern. So our feeling is that case two, if we are going to implement this policy at all in the future, case two would probably be most agreeable, but we still have to consider the impact it would have on the cost. So the general feeling in Japan over this proposal is that they're not necessarily against the changes if they can be convinced that it would be for the good of the internet, but the practical actual impact is very real to them, and how it would help to the internet in general seems really conceptual to them at the moment. So that's why they're not really convinced of the needs for this kind of policy change. But at the same time, so if they can be more convinced that this would be for the good of the internet, I don't think they would strongly be opposed to this policy change. And well, they feel that HD ratio change, which was passed in the last meeting, that could be acceptable, and maybe we can go through this change. But why do we really have to go further and make changes in the assignment size when there are these kind of impacts? Those were the questions that were raised. And since it did not reach consensus at the last APNIC meeting, we did not take a consensus vote. So it's just like more of my personal impression rather than a formal representation of the comments in Japan. So the issues to be considered would be, so to what extent should we consider these kind of impact to the ISPs for changing the policy? And the second point is that JPNIC also understands that the intention of the policy, and we have to look in the long term for the good of the internet. So what would be a good balance between this long-term impact and the short-term impact that it might have on the ISPs? That's all from me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Izumi. Any comments or questions? I'm sure you have, Jeff.
Yeah. Jeff Houston, APNIC. As one of the folk who authored, I think, that proposal at the start, I'd like to thank you first for conducting the survey, and the answer is indeed very interesting and useful. Mm. I think your final comments were actually precisely the point of the problem. What's the balance between the long-term view and the short-term issues? And the underlying thinking behind this particular proposal was actually concerned with how long should the industry view IPv6 as a sustainable solution? And in that time frame, how many things get made out of silicon that want to communicate? The other assumption inside V6 that actually wasn't stated up front in that policy proposal, but nevertheless is a fundamental piece of IPv6 assumption, there are no NATs. Mm-hmm. So every device, everything, every RFID, everything gets an address.
Yeah.
And when the original IPv6 addressing architecture was set up, and there were a number of iterations of it, the feeling inside the community at the time was, well, we'll do this for the first 1/8 of the address space, and if we're wrong, we'll just change it later. Mm-hmm. I think what we're finding as an industry is that that attitude doesn't work, and that we're finding, particularly with IPv4, that the early recipients of address space are certainly being examined in terms of one university, an entire /H, you know, what happened there and why should that persist? And we're finding that undoing those early decisions and changing things on the fly is remarkably hard.
Yeah.
So part of the intent of the proposal was indeed to err towards the long side view.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if there was any kind of, well, you know, the HD ratio might not be enough, what do you do then? And how easy would it be to change? The comment that I made at the time, and I would make again, is once you get to deploying 50 billion, 100 billion devices on a network, and you get entrenched operations that are commodity-based, it's no longer high expertise, high touch, can you change anything? Mm-hmm. Have you then started on a track that you cannot deviate from due to its sheer size and inertia? So the question about the balance between long and short is just spot on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tough question to answer in any industry, and we're now being faced with it here. I had certainly erred on the view of long term. I have enormous hope in V6 that it encompasses an amazing world, much, much bigger than any of us could possibly imagine. And in that case, you need a lot more addresses than the existing addressing policy is going to give you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it's a good question. I'd like to highlight that in this discussion.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for the explanation. And I think pretty much, you know, everybody in JPNIC understands your, you know, your idea and concept. So we probably have to go a little bit more into, you know, explaining the situation to our community. But at the same time, at this stage, the whole thing seems a bit conceptual to them. That's the current stage. We probably have to still, you know, coordinate between our community and AP as well. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Randy Bush, IIJ. Sorry to continue the Jeff and Randy show. What we have here, interestingly, Jeff, is a very example of an installed base that's trying to having difficulty changing. Even at this stage, okay, that how much it will cost to change from the way we're doing it now to case one, case two, case three, right? Is the core of, you know, how much will the cost be? How much effort? We already have the problem of the installed base trying to change. So maybe they could think that this is, you know, induce, that this is a problem we have at the baby step today, and if we don't make the changes now that we know how to make well, that the problem is going to be 1,000 times larger 3 years from now. You know, the whole problem is, when do we make the change? And changes that we know or that we are fairly confident are wise changes for the long term should be made as early as possible because of that greatly increasing cost.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. But at the same time, I think maybe people feel that if this was proposed at the time of when the policy was first developed, then it would have been okay. But what are we going to do about those two companies that, you know, are facing these kind of losses? Are we going to just say, okay, you're just like two in the whole world, so just, you know, forget it and, you know,
will it get
bad.
Better to them for them when they, I shouldn't even use the third person, I believe I can say we in this case, have to make the much bigger change 3 years out? Those of us that lived through the cider change, where we paid late, where we paid this very change late, it was 100 times more difficult and expensive than if we'd done it 10 years earlier. So those two companies that have a significant cost today, if we are confident that the design change will eventually have to be made for a better internet, you know, they are trading one, well, whatever it is, 1,000 yen today for 1,000,000 yen tomorrow. And that's an American planning point of view, not a Japanese planning point of view.
Okay. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? No?
Jeff Houston, I'm actually now just a little bit confused about next steps, and I actually would like to understand, at least from this policy SIG's point of view, what the next step is. Mm-hmm. Right now, the proposal relating to N-site allocations is not a proposal anymore. It's gone away. It's not active. Mm-hmm. There is a proposal inside the RIPE community, as you pointed out, the variable size one with a better degree of detail as to how allocations are assessed, but there's nothing in APNIC. I'm quite happy to work with the ad hoc committee that I'd been working with before as part of the IAB to resubmit a proposal more like the RIPE NCC one for consideration, but I don't want to waste this room's time if it's simply nothing's changed, then it won't go anywhere. So if there is some interest in reconsidering this matter and you would like a policy proposal to focus your attention on what is possible here, I am more than happy, if you will, to take this advice and resubmit a proposal. But I would actually prefer some guidance from the SIG up front as to whether you really want to continue to consider this issue. So do you want to see this proposal more along the lines of a RIPE NCC model, where it's purely variable, resubmitted into the APNIC process or not? No, it's not a case of whether you eventually approve it or not. It's just, do you want to keep on discussing this? That was Randy Bush actually volunteering some help, which would be gratefully accepted.
So Jeff, yes, you can always submit your proposal at any time if you would like to, and there is another volunteer. But I'm not sure whether there is a need from other members or participants in the SIG. So I'd like to know whether you have the interest to see the proposal coming again.
I would like to know the same answer. Yes.
Okay. So is so I would like to see your hand if you have any interest to see the proposal to change the assignment size in IPv6 assignment sizes. If you have any interest, please raise your hand. Thank you.
I'll obviously take the chair's guidance here, but given that show of hands, I don't believe you're going to see this policy proposal.
Okay, yeah, yes, I know. I know that. But I just like to see the how many of you are for your intention. Kosuke-san.
Yes, Kosuke speaking. I guess many of us are really interested in this discussion, but it's pretty much long-term issue to be clarified how even we how it proposed to on the stage, I guess. So that it's been a little too shortcut to say changing the assignment size is in favor or not. We totally never know how much impact it's going to be. So I guess if you call the hands, how many people are interested in this discussion, then many of them are raising hands. But I don't know how many people are in favor to change the assignment size. Then I myself is hardly raising my hands, I guess.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.
We have been here before. We will change the assignment size. Do you want to do it now while it's cheap? Or do you want to do later while it's 1,000 or 1,000,000 times more expensive?
I'm sorry if I was unclear. I was indeed asking for interest, not approval. But all I was, well, I thought I heard some confusion there about what you're asking for. It's not whether you're in favour of actually doing the change at this point, but it helps the discussion to have a proposal to talk about. And the question really was from me, do you wish in this SIG to continue to consider this? In which case, I'm happy to produce a policy proposal again that would help you discuss. But if there's no interest in even talking about it, then there's no point in producing a policy proposal at this point if you're not interested in discussing. So that's what I thought the show of hands was about. And if there was some confusion there, then I hope this has clarified it.
Yep.
Would you like to ask for another show of hands?
Yes.
Simply on interest.
Okay, right. Okay. Yes. Simply on interest. Do you like... would you like to continue discussion on this matter? Please raise your hand. Okay, thank you.
Good enough?
Yeah. Apparently, we should continue this kind of discussion in the future.
In that case, if with your approval, I will submit a policy proposal into that effect to assist with that then.
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Do.
Akino Maimura from JPNIC. Isn't it just conveyed the opinion from the JP community to the stage? That means that she is not the network operator, and she just representing the community. So I'd like to have that such kind of discussion from Japanese community. So I am now encouraging Japanese community to participate that discussion very eagerly, and I think that's really, really significant for our community in Japan.
Thank you, Maimura-san. Any other comment? Okay, so thank you, Izumi.
Thank you.
So the next speaker is Billy, who is talking about an issue with critical infrastructure assignment size.
Hi, nice to meet you. My name is Billy Chun from KL League of NIDA. I'm not here to propose anything. I just convey the concerns and messages from Korean community over IPv6 allocation and assignment policy on critical infrastructure. I'm just going to use APNIC policy. Sorry for my laziness. And if you look at the APNIC IPv6 allocation and assignment policy, especially on the critical infrastructure. Here, this part, the minimum assignment made under this term is /32. As other countries almost does, we Korea have CCTLD sites, and we implemented IPv6 enable on our CCTLD site. But we have another site for backup region, and then we, you know, possibly implement IPv6 on the other multiple sites. But we already have a /32 for our CCTLD sites, but we, like I mentioned, we future implementation of IPv6, we requested /29 based on this policy to APNIC, and then APNIC recommend /48 assignment on critical infrastructure. So I think statement is a little bit confusing. I don't know if it's English is not the first word, so that probably it's lack of English. But from our understanding, we thought the minimum assignment made under this term is /32. That means in one country, every CCTLD site can receive one /32 prefix. They don't care about the prefix. They care about routing policy. As far as I know, I consulted with them, and they told me that there's no clear statement on the routing policy on routing table at this moment, like RFC or, you know, internationally agreed documentation on routing policy. And it pretty much looked like that it dependent on LIR's allocation policy. So they are worried about they are filtered out of their prefix. So I just want to share opinion and the experience with our community and other regions. So if anyone was in this kind of situation, could you tell me about this?
Randy Bush, IIJ. I run, not for IIJ, but myself run six ccTLD ccTLD servers. I see no reason for this. Does no good. You can look up the servers in the DNS. Why do they have to be in special address blocks?
Okay.
Terry Manderson from APNIC. Can I just clarify, was the issue about the actual size of the allocation or the fact that it's in a special address range?
It's actual size. It's
okay,
not,
thank you.
Yeah.
And furthermore, I want to clarify, are you actually saying that you are not, or you are having difficulties because of the said deaggregation rule for IPv6? Right. So you have a /32 and you have reluctance to deaggregate. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, they're worried about the future aggregation. Yeah.
Maybe we should point back to the work from Zumi and Jeff and in future Randy about variable length allocations, perhaps. Thank you.
Billy?
Yes.
I just want to clarify. Is there any case in your country that your ccTLD have to receive multiple /32?
Like I said, at the moment they don't have. There's one ccTLD which received the /32 already, and
okay.
Then another site is is planning to implement IPv6 on their site,
mm-hmm.
And then there's several.
It's separate network.
There's several sites waiting
okay.
for IPv6 implementation. So for the future implementation of IPv6, we thought probably we need the same size of IP address /32. That's, the reason is that filtering is the main reason, I guess.
Sanjaya from APNIC. This is more of a question to the routing community, because if I recall correctly, looking at the routing table in IPv6. Last time I checked, there are even some /64 being advertised.
Really?
Yeah, so there's quite a few 48. My questions to the routing, to the IPv6 operator is, have you started filtering size?
Terry again, sorry to answer my my boss's question, but yes, operators have started filtering size. I've noticed in experiments that I've done about deaggregation and announcing /35s and smaller from our /32 allocation that they in fact do not get full visibility due to filtering policies of other operators.
So that sort of validate Bill's concerns then?
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Philip Smith, Cisco. I run Cisco's presence on the IPv6 internet as it is. And basically, the two filtering policies that ISPs seem to follow, both are based on what Gert Döring puts together. They're either relaxed filters or the strict filters. Some ISPs implement strict filters, basically those on the registry's minimum allocation, so /32. Other ISPs don't. They run them as /48s. And I operate the latter because nobody has yet explained how IPv6 multi-homing will work with /32 being the filter limit. So I don't really understand the concern within Korea Yes, I announced the Cisco /32 aggregate. Yes, there's /48s from with that being announced as well, and there's no real reachability issue.
Hi, I'm from KLA. My name is Sungun Lee. I know that these related issues, I read the RIPUSHI, I guess, 2772. This is about the 6-bond routing guidelines. They said that BGP administrators filtering issues, they could advertise the BGP prefix. They couldn't advertise the BGP prefix longest prefix than the RIR or any RIR delegated assigned prefix. They do not advertise longer prefix better than RIR assigned at all delegated.
So prefix means hypothesis. It's pretty much dependent on RIR allocation.
Philip Smith, Cisco. RFC 2772 covers 6-bone. We're
yes.
talking about the real IPv6 internet. 6-bone disappears on the 6th of June this year.
Yes, Philip, was there any standards for the, regulation on clear statement on the filtering? Like RFC or documentation, was there any in native environment?
Philip Smith, Cisco, not that I know of. I mean, it boils down to same as people do for IPv4. What you should be doing is announcing your aggregate that you receive from the registry and do the necessary subdivision to get whatever traffic engineering you need to achieve. That's what I would say. But I don't think that's written down as a rule anywhere, that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Actually, I know that real global IPv6 routing area, I know that there's no concrete routing schemes. So I refer to the 6-bond routing guidelines, you know.
We have Jody here to present something about
Thank you
V6
for
filtering. No. Regarding this matter.
Okay.
This web page could be interesting for this topic. It's a web page where I believe most of the ISPs which are implementing IPv6 are looking for recommendations for prefixes, so for filtering prefixes. So you have here even examples for different routers, and you have a very well maintained list of all the prefixes that should be filtered, even if you want to go for the relaxed or the strict, as Philip mentioned. And you have, I think it's very, very well maintained, and I really recommend at least my customers to follow these rules, because really, really are very nice in the sense that following up what is going on in all the prefixes allocated to the RIRs and also the ISP. So I guess it could be interesting. Everybody can take a look on that. So that's it.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you for your opinions and suggestions. I will go back to my community and share these knowledges, and then if there's still concerns or needs for these issues, I'll be back at next APNIC meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Billy. So we could cover all the presentation in this SIG session. And we have more time to end this session. So I will pass this mic to Kenny.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Because we still have time before the lunch, and I would like to take the opportunity to elaborate some of the topic we discussed in the previous session. And hold on. Okay, that's the open session. Open action item proposal 20001, application of HD ratio to IPv4. And in the previous session, I already conclude, since we don't have proposal, we don't have any suggestion to tell the community what we should do and what we should do for the next step. So I recommend we take it back to the mailing list for 1 month, and we see what happened, and after 1 month, we make a decision. And I'd like to elaborate more regarding to your opinion regarding to the open action item, because once you go into the mailing list, there's very few traffic comes in, and how did it get input from the community? So if you have any opinion or comment or question regarding to the open action, I would like to have your input and also share your input with the community. And regarding to the same similar proposal on the other IR, the last call already proceed in the RIPE region. And in the Lakhni and Erin, the proposal is abandoned. So before we take it back to the mailing list, please let us share your opinion and your comment. So very last call, any comment or opinion, suggestion regarding to the open action? And thank you.
And Lord APNIC. Kenny, I've just got a question. What is the decision that you're going to make at the end of the 1 month? Are you going to suggest to abandon the proposal or continue discussing?
It really depends on the discussion under the mailing list. If there's no discussion in the mailing list, I will discuss with the two co-chair. We can either abandon the proposal.
Because there was a sense from this morning's earlier discussion, at least articulated by Jeff, that we should think very carefully and cautiously about continuing with this in the light of the research that's been done about conservation and the impact of conservation. So,
right.
So there
right.
has been some feedback, at least to that extent.
Okay, right. Thank you. Any other comment? Okay, if no other comments, I still take it back in the mailing list, and also thank you, Anne, to share the information. At least there's some feedback. And so we will discuss the open action item during the mailing list, and also we will discuss with the co-chair for the policy SIG to see how we're going to proceed in the next step regarding the open action item. So if there's no other comment or question, I'd like to conclude the meeting is adjourned, and the lunch will be served outside in a layer 2 foyer. Okay, thank you for your participation. I'll see you next time. Thank you.